Mandatory opening narration. Welcome to Ekantra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekantra AI.
Imagine a world just teeming with life. Vibrant, rich with tradition, full of intellectual energy, but also unknowingly right on the edge of this abyss.
Mm.
How does one family, just one family, become the lens through which we see such an epic tragedy unfold?
That's the core question, isn't it?
Yeah. So today we're doing a deep dive into Isaac Bashevis-Singer's huge work, The Family Mozgot. And it's more than just a novel. It feels like a sweeping saga, almost an elegy for a civilization that was, well, wiped out.
Precisely. And we're not just, you know, summarizing a book today. We're really trying to trace the unraveling of a whole culture through this one powerful family.
Right.
A journey that reveals not only their specific struggles, but maybe even gives us echoes of our own uncertain times.
Our mission really is to navigate all those intricate layers Singer created and discover the profound, sometimes challenging insights he offers about, well, human nature and the relentless forces of history.
That's a powerful way to put it. So, okay, let's start with the man himself, Isaac Bashevis-Singer, the architect of this vanishing world. He really seems to bridge two worlds, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And that dual perspective is, I think, key to understanding his genius. Singer, born in Poland, 1904, into a rabbinical family. He was just steeped in Jewish law, mysticism, folklore, right from the start.
Completely immersed.
Totally. An absolute insider to that rich Eastern European Jewish culture. But then he emigrates to New York in 1935, and almost overnight, he becomes an outsider to American life.
Right. A total shift.
Exactly. And this unique position, it allowed him to build this incredible literary bridge, interpreting one world for another, capturing what was about to be lost. And what's really fascinating is his commitment, his unwavering commitment to writing in Yiddish.
Yeah. Why Yiddish specifically?
Well, he saw it as imbued with the very spirit of his people. It wasn't just a language. It was the soul of that world.
And his style.
Yeah.
It's so distinctive. You get this intense realism, but then suddenly these flashes of the supernatural, you know, demons, ghosts, debunks.
Hmm.
They're not just decoration, are they?
No, not at all. They're woven into the fabric of the culture he's writing about.
Hmm.
Singer blends this like unflinching realism with these fantastical elements.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while, he's grappling with huge moral questions, earthy humor, deep spiritual searching. It's a voice that somehow speaks across cultures, which is why, you know, he got the Nobel Prize in Literature in 78.
The first Yiddish writer.
The very first. He basically translated an entire universe for the rest of the world.
And The Family Mozgot.
Mm-hmm.
It feels so central to his work, especially mm-hmm. when you think about when it came out, serialized in Yiddish in 45, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right after the war. But then the English version in 1950, that timing.
Oh, the timing is absolutely crucial.
Writing after the Holocaust, about the world before it.
Wow. It adds this unbelievable layer of poignancy. It makes it more than just a story. It's a literary debut, yes, but it's also this monumental chronicle, a living memorial almost.
Like he was rebuilding it from memory.
Exactly. While the ruins were still smoking, essentially, transforms the book into this act of profound witness. That's why people compare it to the big sagas, you know, Mann's Buddenbrooks or Galsworthy's Foresight Saga.
Captures that same sweep of decline.
Precisely, that sense of a family, a society coming apart. And through this book, Singer really laid out his major themes, tradition versus modernity, faith in a secular age, those complicated, often messy family dynamics.
Okay, so let's get into the core premise then. We're talking about this epic family saga in Warsaw, late 1800s up to the brink of World War II, 1939. How does this one family, the Mozgots, manage to represent, well, everything?
What Singer does so brilliantly is show that the Mozgots aren't just a wealthy Jewish merchant family. In many ways, they are Polish Jewish life in miniature.
A microcosm.
Exactly. He uses their rise and their eventual fall to illustrate the slow disintegration of traditional Jewish life itself. You know, under all these pressures, modernization, assimilation, political chaos, and obviously the rise of Nazism looming.
And the family members themselves sort of embody different responses.
That's right. Each member represents a different path, a different reaction.
Yeah.
You've got the staunchly Orthodox, the secular socialists, the Zionists, the ones trying to assimilate. They represent all the internal tensions pulling that community apart.
It sounds like a huge struggle.
Yeah.
The old world, rigid, faith-based, versus all these new forces,
mm-hmm.
secular thought, politics, individual desire, really. It makes you ask, what happens when those centuries-old foundations start to, you know, crumble?
And it's crumbling from both outside and inside. That's key. Yeah. The central question Singer seems to pose is, how does a community hold on to its essence when its anchors are just dissolving?
Right.
And pivotal to exploring this whole thing is Asa Heschel Bannett.
Ah, yes. The intellectual.
The brilliant, restless young guy from a small town. He's kind of a man adrift, caught between the Jewish Enlightenment, the Haskalah, and the Hasidic traditions he grew up with. His journey, his story, becomes this really vital thread running through the family's slow unraveling. He reflects that bigger crisis.
These characters really are the lifeblood, aren't they? Each one showing a different way of coping or not coping. Let's start right at the top then. Meshulam Muscat, the patriarch.
Meshulam. He is the old world, at its peak, really. Wealthy, deeply religious, authoritarian, rules his family with an iron fist.
Believes in tradition and wealth.
Absolutely. He thinks those are the guarantees for legacy.
Yeah.
But his death, which happens, you know, surprisingly early in the book.
Yeah, I noticed that.
It's not just a plot point. It's the catalyst, the trigger. Finding out about his secret second wife, the contested will, it just unleashes chaos, bitter legal fights. The fortune gets squandered. It really signals the beginning of the end for his whole system. His death is the start of the family's fracture, both spiritually and financially.
And then there's Asa Heschel Bannett. You described him as the tormented intellectual heart. He sounds fascinating. Drawn to philosophy, Spinoza, but also paralyzed by indecision.
That's Asa in a nutshell. He's the classic intellectual trapped between worlds, smart enough to question the old ways, but totally unable to find real answers or peace in secular thought or modern life.
So his journey is downward.
It really is a spiral into disillusionment. He just can't commit, not to a belief system, not to a job, not even really to the woman he loves.
Hadassah.
Right. And his decision to marry Adele instead, out of pragmatism, it seals his fate. Tragically, he perfectly embodies that rootlessness, that alienation of the modern Jewish intellectual, always asking the big questions, but finding zero comfort.
Which brings us to the women in his life. Hadassah Muscat, Meshulam's granddaughter.
She sounds like pure romantic love personified, but vulnerable.
Oh, her story is just heartbreaking. Hadassah is lovely, smart, sensitive, head over heels for Asa. But the social pressure, the family opposition, she's forced into this conventional loveless marriage.
Crushes her spirit.
Completely. Unhappiness, illness. Her story represents that tragic sacrifice of individual happiness for, you know, what turns out to be a pretty hollow sense of family honor, a tradition that couldn't save anyone in the end. She shows the limits placed on women, even as that world was falling apart.
And her cousin Adele is the complete opposite, sounds like. Worldly, ambitious.
Yes. Adele represents the allure of assimilation, of modern freedom. She's ambitious, sensual, drawn to Asa's intellect, maybe sees him as a status symbol.
Mm-hmm.
But their marriage is just this constant battle. And her pursuit of material things, of status, it leaves her just as unfulfilled and alone as Asa is in his intellectual wandering.
So the new world isn't necessarily the answer either.
Singer seems to be saying that, abandoning tradition doesn't automatically equal happiness. It offers its own kind of emptiness if there's nothing deeper anchoring you.
And beyond these main figures, there are others, right? Like Koppel Berman, the bailiff. He sounds different.
Koppel is the pragmatist, the shrewd survivor. He rises through cunning, maybe some moral compromises. He's a contrast to the idealists like Asa.
Shows another way to navigate the chaos.
Exactly. And then there's the rest of the Muscat clan. You've got Leah, the strong daughter. Abram, the pleasure seeker, pious New Uni, traditional Pearl, each one trying a different strategy, holding on to a different piece of identity as their world just unravels around them. They form this rich mosaic of a society in crisis.
The story itself, you said, it feels more like a chronicle than a straight plot. It starts in this golden age under Meshulam.
Yeah, that first part, late 1800s,
It
paints this picture of certainty, rigid hierarchies, arranged marriages, deep religious observance. It feels solid.
But fragile.
Exactly. And when Asa Heschel arrives with his questions and his desires, he's like an intrusion. He sparks that love triangle, hints at the conflicts brewing beneath the surface in the younger generation. It's that moment just before everything breaks.
And Meshulam's death is the breaking point. That ushers in the romantic entanglements and social change. How quickly does it unravel after he's gone?
Almost instantly. Without his heavy hand, the family just fragments. Personal desires clash openly with what the community expects. Those legal battles over the will, they don't just lose money, they lose that inherited structure.
Right.
And Asa's choice to marry Adele, betraying Hadassah, It's more than personal. It symbolizes those pragmatic, sometimes self-destructive choices people make when the old rules don't seem to apply anymore.
Then World War I hits, accelerating everything into the great unraveling.
Yeah, the war is a huge shock. It physically scatters the family, but also ideologically. People are pushed into new paths, often disillusioning ones. Zionism, communism, just trying to blend in.
Amos.
His time in the military just makes him feel even more alienated. And after the war, you get rising Polish nationalism, putting even more pressure on Jewish identity. The family home gets sold that huge symbol of their past power.
The walls are literally crumbling.
Literally. And they drift towards these different ideologies, searching for answers, but mostly finding, well, more disillusionment.
Moving into the interwar crisis, things get darker externally, too. Rising anti-Semitism, Nazi Germany.
Yeah, the sense of impending doom just hangs heavy in the air. Economic struggles, blatant anti-Semitism, these outside forces now mirror the family's internal decay. Mm-hmm. Asa's relationships get even more destructive, reflecting his own chaos. There's that brief, incredibly sad reunion between him and Hadassah.
Flicker of what could have been.
Exactly, but it's completely overshadowed by the darkness closing in. The doors out of Poland start shutting. Their fate feels sealed.
And then the end. The final catastrophe. It's so abrupt. Yeah. September 1939, the German invasion, and this world singer Bill just vanishes.
Devastatingly abrupt. Warsaw under siege, chaos everywhere. And that final scene, chilling. Asa Heschel in a cellar with another intellectual, bombs falling all around.
And that line.
Death is the Messiah. That's the real truth. It's just a gut punch. The ultimate bleak inversion of all traditional hope. It marks the total collapse, spiritual and physical, of everything that came before.
Wow. Okay, let's unpack some of the big themes here. We talked about the erosion of traditional authority, but you suggested it's more complex than just loss.
Much more complex. Singer isn't just mourning the past. He subtly shows how the old world's own rigidity, its suppressed desires, actually created weaknesses, vulnerabilities that modernity exploited.
So it wasn't just external forces.
No, it was an interplay. The internal cracks made it susceptible to the external pressures. And the spiritual vacuum left behind is immense. Modern ideas, politics, they try to fill it, but often fail miserably. It's this tragic interdependence.
And Asa Heschel, as the tragedy of the intellectual in transition, his intelligence becomes a burden.
A huge burden. He embodies that deep anguish of being caught between worlds. He can pick everything apart, question everything, but find no solid ground, no peace. It really makes you question if knowledge alone brings happiness, or if sometimes it just isolates you.
Love and sexuality are also powerful forces in the book, both liberating and destructive.
Absolutely central. That passionate, forbidden love between Asa and Hadassah, it defies convention but brings so much suffering and guilt. It shows love's power, but also its potential for destruction.
Contrasted with his marriage to Adele.
Right, which is pragmatic, empty, a battleground. Singer is very frank about desire, about lust, showing it as this powerful, almost demonic force that drives people to self-destructive choices, mirroring the larger societal breakdown.
But even with all this change, the persistence of Jewish identity remains key. People might stop practicing, but they're still Jewish.
Undeniably, Singer suggests it's deeper than just religion or custom. It's this indelible mark. And it actually becomes more complex, more problematic. When the old markers fade, how do you belong to something that doesn't fully exist in the same way anymore? It's a persistent, sometimes agonizing connection.
And that premonition of catastrophe, reading it now, knowing what happened, it casts such a shadow.
That dramatic irony is one of Singer's most powerful tools. Because he wrote it after the Holocaust, our knowledge just permeates everything. Even moments of joy feel fragile, poignant reminders of what's coming. It's subtle, but always there. It almost makes the internal conflicts seem like tragic contributors to their vulnerability.
Underneath it all, there's this search for meaning in a godless world. They try everything. Politics, love, art, money.
And nothing quite works, does it? It's Singer's deep empathy for that human struggle, humanity adrift, trying to fill that void left by God or tradition. Asa looks to Spinoza, finds no real comfort. Others try activism, find disillusionment.
But the search itself has value.
I think Singer suggests it does. It's fundamentally human, even noble, to keep searching, even if there are no final, easy answers.
Which connects to destiny versus free will. How much control do they really have?
That's the big question, isn't it? Especially with history looming so large, Asa, the thinker, is often the most passive, just swept along. Singer seems to suggest that, yes, individuals make choices, but they're operating within these massive historical currents that might just be unstoppable. It raises huge questions about agency.
Singer's technique, that third-person omniscient view, it feels like more than just a narrative choice.
Oh, definitely. It's like the voice of a collective memory that's fading. It lets us see both the intimate struggles and the big picture, the historical erosion. It gives the whole thing this prophetic, almost elegiac tone.
Like traditional storytelling.
Exactly. There's moral insight, gentle irony, but also deep compassion. It guides you with understanding, not judgment.
And the episodic structure, you said it mirrors the fragmented experience of change, like snapshots.
Yeah, it unfolds over decades, vignette by vignette. It builds this immersive sense of a world slowly, inevitably coming apart. Patient, observational.
He uses a lot of symbolism too, right? The Muscat house.
Huge symbol. Represents traditional life, the patriarchy. Its grandeur fades, it empties out, gets sold off as the family disintegrates. And Warsaw itself. It's practically a character vibrant, chaotic, but ultimately doomed. Its seasons reflect the character's inner lives.
And the language managing to bring that Yiddish flavor into English without making it seem, you know, quaint or exotic. How
it's masterful through the rhythm of the dialogue, the cultural details, maybe keeping a few specific Yiddish terms. He makes the mindset, the cadence, feel authentic in English. You really connect with their humanity. They feel immediate, not like museum pieces.
And that dramatic irony again, combined with the psychological depth, watching them worry about everyday things.
Knowing the horror that awaits them, it's heartbreaking. It infuses every page with this deep melancholy. And Singer dives right into their heads, their self-deceptions, their rationalizations, but also those moments of painful clarity. They feel so real, so flawed, so human.
Some of those lines just resonate so strongly. It's a Heschel saying, "The eternal questions have no answers, but man must go on asking them. The burden of intellect."
Mm-hmm. Or that sweeping line, "The old world is dying and the new world is not yet born." It perfectly captures that in-between crisis state they're living in. They're emotional anchors in the text.
And the paradox. We live like animals and die like saints. That duality.
Singer's view of human nature right there, capable of the lowest drives and the highest aspirations, often at the same time.
The overall feeling the book leaves you with. It's profound. Melancholy, definitely. Nostalgia for this vibrant world is just gone. You feel pity for these flawed people.
Deeply flawed, greedy, lustful, foolish sometimes.
Yeah, but their struggles feel universal. And watching them unable to see the catastrophe coming, it's just unbearable.
And what makes Singer so brilliant, I think, is that he refuses easy judgments. He forces you, the reader, to grapple with the complexity of it all, the limits and the value of the old ways, the opportunities and the dangers of the new.
The deep empathy, even for their destructive choices.
That's what makes it so powerful, so enduring. It really challenges any simple idea of progress. It shows how a whole society can unravel from the inside, even before the final blow comes from outside.
It really is more than just a story. A remembrance, like you said, a literary Kaddish, the Jewish prayer for the dead, for millions of people, for an entire way of life. And it leaves us with these huge, timeless questions about faith, identity, meaning. How do you find meaning in a world that feels so chaotic? Mandatory closing line. This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.